You are listening to the Backstage Pass podcast, hosted by Hannah Tridwell and brought to you by Tommy.
Joe Dolman, how are you?
I'm very well, Hannah Tridwell.
Good. I'm so glad. I'm good. For those of the listeners or the watchers of this video, you are an independent musician, artist, songwriter, musical director.
Kind of like jack of all trades, master of none.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no, I actually, like, I feel like I sometimes spread myself incredibly thin.
Yeah. Is the one that you prefer over the others?
I definitely would say being the artist in the sense of like being the person who has to be the face of things is my least favorite.
Right.
Not like I hate being an artist and it's so annoying, like having to be on stage and like people looking at me and stuff. It's not like that. It's just more like I love creating music and I love, like, you know, writing songs and producing, and I love, especially when it comes to, like, you know, like I said, like being an MD and session player and stuff, I love being part of a bigger picture and being part of something. It's like a bigger thing, you know, so that's where I get my most satisfaction, as opposed to like just being the face of it, you know.
Yeah. What goes into musical direction?
It depends on the project, I guess. I wouldn't say I'm like massively experienced in it. I mean, I've been doing it for a couple of years with a few different projects, but I just think it's like, in a vague layman's terms, is like taking someone's music and translating it to a live show that is accurate to the artist's vision. And
do you get a lot of notes for that from the artist? I mean,
massively varies, actually. Like some artists are like, I might as well not be doing that job. Like, they might as well not pay me because they have such a clear vision of what they want. But sometimes they just don't want to be the person who has to like sit there and like make the click tracks up and like, you know, make sure that you know, everything is just mixed right. It depends on like the size of the project massively, because like some bands might be just triggering stuff off like a sample pad, like an SPD, like, you know, Roland Make, and they might just have the track as a stereo track, or they might be running it out of Ableton and they might have like a sound card that's got multiple outputs, or you might have like bigger playback rigs that can do like 16 outputs. So it means you can mix track to 16 outputs, which is like having 16 extra instruments. It's easier to mix it because there's more going on, but by easier, it also can make the live show vary more, because if you've got a different room, different sound engineer every night, I don't think you'd have the same sound guy, or like, you know, same sound engineer on your gig if you were at that level, because you'd have someone mixing it accurately every night. But
it's tricky, like, when you have different sound guys.
Oh,
and by
the worst.
Tricky, I mean awful.
I went straight to the worst. You were like, yeah, tricky, like tricky. being really conservative about it.
Genuinely horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. When they start going, do you know what this sad ballad about like their grandparents dying needs? Is some crazy echo. And it's like, please put that down. It's like saying to children, like, oh, please put that down. Having your own crew is the best thing. Like, not just front of house, like having your own I have a guitar tech called Mikey, who like actually guitar techs for me in my artist project when I'm playing shows, depending on if there's budget, basically.
Yeah.
And he also guitar techs for one of the bands I MD for, this band called the Adelaides, like country pop band. He's the guitar tech for that too. Well, I say guitar tech, he's just the backline tech in general, because we don't have a drum tech, we don't have the budget for like multiple techs, so he just kind of covers all bases. He really gets put to work on those shows, but he's wicked.
I've never had like a guitar tech, or, you know, like individual instrument techs. I've only ever had someone do the sound, but I think for like maybe two headline tours I've had someone do sound consistently at every venue, but the ones where I haven't, there's
terrifying.
Always it is truly, yeah, because you don't know what the room's going to sound like, so you know it's going to be like a case of figuring out when you get there anyway. But then usually the venue, if it's the venue providing the sound guy, it's just some random guy that like would rather be watching, you know, not necessarily like a into the music you're making, just rather be like at home watching The Simpsons or whatever sometimes.
Yeah. Or just in the bar, like next door to the venue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It is such a tricky one, especially on like lower capacity tours where the venues really vary in terms of not just the room, but like the equipment. If you're not like, that's the biggest thing about, like, I guess, like, my job is, like, we were talking about my job as an MD is, like, I'm trying to make a consistent show. So, yeah. like, but the bands that I'm working with in that sense have got, like, a consistent level of equipment they're going to be bringing to every show in terms of, like, they'll be touring a front of house desk sometimes and or, like, at least a front of house engineer that's going to be mixing the show. Like, we'll have the same playback rig, the same drums, the same mics, the same, you know, everything on the stage. So it's easy to get a consistent show every time. But when you're on that, when you're doing, like, those kind of smaller capacity tours where, like, the budget is lower for the shows, it means that, like, stuff has to be compromised, and that's where, like, you feel very at risk and very vulnerable, because you hold, obviously, like, you're, you know, I'm sure people listen to this podcast, if they haven't heard your music and seen you live, like, you are a consistently great performer in the sense that, like, you're wicked, like, and but what can be the scary thing is that you can't control what the sound guy does.
Yeah, it is. It's particularly bad when, I don't know if you've experienced this, like, at a live show or a festival, but if you have a sound guy who is slightly distracted by something, and at that moment in time, you need something, like, you need more of your vocal in your ears to hear what your pitch is, and you're kind of making the eye signals, and then it becomes a...
When you've got someone who's mixing front of house and monitors at the same time and they're in a field 200 yards away and you're, like, squinting at them in the sun, they're just like, oh no, he just always looks like that when he's on stage. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm trying to get your attention, you know, but yeah, horrible, you know, stuff of nightmares.
Have you had any nightmarish stories on tours that you've done for your artist project?
I'm sure I have. It's like sometimes
blocking
they just
them out.
trying to blur. Yeah. Block them out. Hope, pray the next night is better or whatever. But I've had, like, a fair few kind of car crash moments in gigs where, like, things have been... What I had one in Leeds. I can't remember what venue it was. It might have been like a Porto or something. Like,
in my hometown. It
wasn't Brudenell Social Club. I know that it wasn't there because I love that venue so much. Like,
yeah, it's great. Have you been to it since it got refurbished?
No, they were doing it last time I was playing there.
Yeah, it's wicked, actually. It's really good.
But I can't remember where it was in Leeds, but we had, like, a nightmare where the power tripped out in the venue and the desk just, like, switched off. So for, like, whilst the... And I didn't have
during a song?
During a song. And I was, like, full band as well. So, like, there was a lot of stuff to switch off. but, like, the lighting rig went off and so did the desk.
What did you do?
I took my in-ears out and was like, what's going on? Like, I was like, we had my own front of house on this one, actually. And he was just like, just give me 5 minutes. So I just, like, did an acoustic, like, song. It wasn't a big venue. It was like 150 cap. Like, I can't remember the name of it now. It's really annoying me, but... Yeah, I just did, like, an acoustic song, just, like, at the front of the stage, got everyone to come around and, like, be quiet for a sec while I just, whilst my very, very nervously sweating sound engineer was, like, looking at a switchboard. Like, I could see him, like, in the back, like, there was, like, a cabinet where all the power was right next to the desk. And he was just, like, scratching his head, putting a screwdriver in, pulling the screwdriver out, scratching his head. And then put, like, perfect timing. As soon as everyone clapped at the end of the, like, acoustic song, the lights just came back on. Like, it was all part of the show.
Nice.
And I was just, like, I was just joking with him afterwards. Like, yeah, if you could do that every night of the tour and we'll make that a part of the show, that would be great. And he was like, I'm not doing that. Like, you know.
Sounds like it had a good effect though, in a way.
Oh yeah, it worked out. It worked out fine. It was like, think on your feet, kind of what would be good in this moment, you know.
Yeah.
They've definitely not all gone that smoothly.
Right at the beginning when I was first starting out, I definitely pulled my own guitar lead out by standing on it.
Classic.
And that was not great.
we've all been there.
Yeah, rookie mistake. Yeah, that's probably the worst one I can think of, really, like during a song. I've had a lot of moments before a show started where I've been like, the sound is still not, or something's still feeding back or some, and it's like 5 minutes till the doors open. And so those kind of situations have been kind of stressful, but always rectified themselves in some way, like magically.
Yeah. It always comes together in the end, some way.
Does.
Like, because you have to make it, you just have to. You know?
Yeah, true.
Do you find, like, you know, Because you don't have a manager, right? Like at the moment. No. So do you find that when you're touring or like playing live shows that you wish there was someone else to kind of take that responsibility? You mean if you, maybe you have a tour manager that comes, or just like a friend or some like someone in the band or something that like can be a bit of a ball buster in the sense, yeah, of like you're yeah, gonna make sure this is right by the time Hannah comes out here, like, you know, because sometimes like when you're in charge of the whole operation it can be like,
whenever I've had like a tour manager or a manager, they've never been like a ball busty type.
Really?
They've kind of like, so like my previous managers have all been very business orientated rather than
right,
musical direction or you know, kind
like,
of
like centered around live touring or anything like that. Yeah, I've had two managers. I'm not managed by anybody now, but I had two managers. The first manager was very like centered around live. He was a booking agent. He's like a venue booker, and had managed other people. He had an understanding of creating music, but wasn't a musician.
Yeah.
And then my second manager was very like business centered, sounds similar to yours, but he also was a musician. Like he did play music, but wasn't technically clued up in terms of like, yeah, like equipment that I might use in production and stuff, but he did manage two producers, so he learned a lot from,
oh, cool,
from them and having conversations about you know recording and had a real understanding of that. But if there was a high pressure situation where it's like, oh my god, this is broke in the middle of a show, or that, like I wouldn't go to him for that. Yeah. in those past,
and I think times, the technology has changed so much as well. You know,
yeah, massively.
In live and in production, and so sometimes maybe it's a little bit hard for, you know, people who've previously been artists or been musicians who become managers. I feel like sometimes it's hard to know, to still be kind of in the know about how things work on a technical side, because it's so different than it was when they were artists. Or
the stuff that happens in a live show now for like a major, let's say like a major label pop act is doing a tour now, what that is now versus what that was even 10 years ago is so different in terms of the equipment and the kind of the commonly found gear on a tour. Like, yeah, I work with a good mix of artists who are like younger or like more modern pop acts, as opposed to like one of the artists I work with is or I've like done a lot of touring with is a guy called Tom Clark, who used to be the front man of the band called The Enemy, like indie band. Cool. Their first album came out in 2007, which was like a number one, so that was like the peak. 2007 to 2010 was like their peak. They had like really, really good success then, but like they're like an indie band touring with big amps and like very minimal. So they didn't start using track until like album four, because they had like a bit more kind of,
oh, okay,
vast, a bit more of a vast live production, whereas like before it was very like a very raw like indie as we imagine it should be, like kind of energy, and it was like super cool. The stuff that like Tom has taken out on tours that I've been on with him in terms of equipment versus like what I take out on the road as a player in like major label pop acts who are also signed to Warner in 2018, 2019 and 2020, like is like vastly different in terms of what I need. Like if I was going out, I can't imagine Tom was going out with in-ears and taking a laptop,
yeah,
like
yeah,
you know, and a sound card ready to go to like change bits of track on the road.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, you know, so different. So it's understandable for managers who have done it previously to now just be managing, as opposed to still doing a project actively, like for them to fall out of touch with the latest stuff. Because I think it's hard for even artists to keep up with the latest stuff. Like,
yeah, God,
you get, I don't know about you, but I definitely get set in my ways with like ways I record music and the way I'm always trying to evolve, like, you know, my understanding of and using new equipment and, you know, new techniques and whatever. But like, there's only so much you can keep up and then use that to your advantage. I mean, if you're constantly, yeah, learning the new thing, like, you know, I saw like Universal Audio just launched like a new
Luna.
Yeah, they launched their new DLW, which is like I'm like, oh, I'm really going to get on that and I'm going to get really understand that so I can use it in sessions if it comes up. If I'm like working in a studio and like, oh, we use Luna. I'm like, I want to know my way around it. But like at the same time, I'm like, I just really like working in Logic and Pro Tools at the moment. And I still, yeah. And I use a little bit of Ableton, but like not so much for like recording, like production, more like live stuff. But
yeah,
you're trying to make yourself versatile without, like I said at the start, like it's like jack of all trades, master of none. You're trying to like understand all these things, but you need to be really good on one of them at least, you know?
Yeah. So. Diversification's good though, right? Especially yeah. when you're independent.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's crucial actually. Like I think if you can't, if you can't adapt to the way other people you work with work, then like you're always going to hit roadblocks. It's all about communication at the end of the day. Like if you can't communicate ideas across to people because you can't put it onto a certain, you know, you can't use certain equipment to get those ideas across, then you're never going to get your ideas across at all.
Yeah, true.
So it can be difficult, but yeah, being diverse is the key a lot of the time.
How do you find being your own manager?
Sometimes I love it in the sense that like I don't have to kind of run anything by anybody, but then sometimes I miss running. Sometimes it's like, you know, when you do something wrong and you do something like, you know, maybe when you were a kid you used to like do something naughty and you know you'd get told off for doing it if you'd have told like your parents that you yeah. were going to do it, but like you, because you didn't tell them, you did it anyway. Like that's what I'm like with my man, like not having a manager now. I'm like, I probably shouldn't be buying this, or like I probably shouldn't be doing this thing for today, like, you know, but no one's here to tell me different, so I'm going to do it. And then actually I'm like, no, I should have done it. So it's a fine line. But on the whole, like I do enjoy, you know, kind of being the person steering the ship solo in the sense. But I have an amazing team of people that I work with on a regular basis. I know you do too, with like, is it Ben Song Mason? Like,
Yeah, my producer. And like to have a good relationship with your distributor, I think is so important.
Definitely.
So like when I stopped working with my manager in last April, I was kind of, we ended on really good terms and we're still really good friends, so that was cool, but I was kind of worried about how I would move forward, or if there was specific things that I wasn't doing that I wouldn't be able to do just myself. And actually the main change for me is just that it's quicker to communicate with different members of my team because I'm not going through somebody else.
And you know that the communication is going to be as clear as possible because it's coming from your mouth. Do you know what I mean? You're saying this is what I feel, rather than saying it to a manager and they interpret it in their own way too. I've definitely found like, well actually I've only not had a manager now for like 2 months.
Oh wow.
So it's kind of fresh.
Yeah.
And I've not been releasing anything, but I've always communicated with my whole team myself a lot. So that hasn't been a big change in the dynamic of like the way I work with people.
I think to be like that. Even if you're not independent, if you can as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're the person who's speaking to people, then like that it tells them that it's important that they're spoken to. Because if it's worth your time, then it's like, as opposed to like, oh, I'll just let my manager deal with it or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I think there's a lot to be said for like it coming directly from the artists.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
But I don't feel like I've come across the hurdle perhaps of speaking to distributors, but I have a pretty good relationship with like the distributors that I've been using over the last couple of years, like in terms of the people that work there. So I'm hoping that the relationship status stays kind of the same,
yeah,
in the sense that they still are happy working with directly with the artists, because I found that in my experience of like when I've been like the fly on the wall in conversations with some of the major label and like big indie label artists that I work with, that the label don't like talking directly to the artist. They want to talk to the manager and they like the hierarchy system because it feels like a bit more secure maybe.
I guess there's more structure and order to it.
People like the structure because then it feels more predictable. But I think ultimately, like, releasing music and, you know, it being successful isn't predictable unless you are Adele or like, you know, I mean, I think when you're on like a lower level. But again, like, it's so hard to define what a lower level artist is now, because you know, there's people making, you know, I mean, there's people like Billie Eilish who are making, with Phineas, making number one albums in their bedrooms. But there's people who are making like a good living off making music in their bedroom. Like, so, yeah, you know, yeah, but they're still, but they might still be defined as a lower level artist because they might not sell any tickets,
yeah,
or to a live show, or like they can't, you know, there's everyone's got the different parameters of what they kind of define as a lower level artist. But I think, like, if you've got a good relationship with your distributor, then hopefully you can kind of work towards that together, rather than them needing that structure from a manager or whatever to give them reassurance. You know, as long as you can reassure them that you're going to work hard and you're doing everything right, yeah, they won't need to hear it from a manager, as long as you're, like, you know, doing it right, you know.
Now, I was saying to you off camera, like, the thing that I find tricky sometimes is not having like expert advice in a particular field anymore, because I used to have that, particularly from in like a business sense, but sure. But yeah, you know, it's definitely doable. There's things that you take on, isn't there? And most of it's kind of admin-y, you know, yeah, more emails, I guess. But then, is it more, or is it just a direct email to the person instead of to the manager? It's,
yeah, I think that's something I've noticed a lot of in the last 2 months, is that, like, I'm having more conversations with more people than ever, because I'm maintaining relationships with people.
Yeah.
So whereas normally I might have a 2-hour phone call with my manager and say, we need to get back to this person about this, and we need to speak to this person about this, and this person needs to be told that they're going to have to wait, and this person needs to be told that we want to do this, and
you
know, start putting things. Whereas now I have to speak to all those people directly. So like, that is adding on more work. But I can be sure it's being done a certain way as well. So
I've had a couple of situations in the past year where I've had to have some conversations that aren't the kind of conversations that artists would have, and they haven't been particularly positive, and I haven't enjoyed that.
Like, yeah, I can definitely relate.
Like, to have a manager there as a kind of barrier from that side of the industry, yeah, and there haven't been many occasions, but on the odd occasion where there's been like something bad has happened, and I've either had to sort it out or be the guy that's not telling someone off, but, you know, not having the nice conversation with someone.
It's got to be done at some point.
It's got to be done, but that's the main thing that I haven't enjoyed about not having a manager. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think it's increasingly common that artists are having to have those conversations themselves.
Yeah.
Because I think just because you're a manager doesn't mean you don't feel that hesitation as well. Like, I think,
yeah,
I think like, it's difficult to do it, especially, and because you want people that a lot of managers say, like, you know, they be the bad guy, so everyone likes you and you don't have to do any of the dirty work, sort of thing. Like, and people maintain their vision of you being this, like, really nice, super friendly all the time artist.
Mm.
But, like, as like, the industry is becoming more and more transparent every day with the way we kind of display ourselves on social media constantly, like, people becoming, you know, people aren't just artists anymore, they're like influencers at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Because they have to, like, have this constant feels like a lot of artists feel like they have to have this constant
presence,
word? Like, presence online, yeah, where people see everything that's going on, and actually, like, that makes it really difficult for you to separate yourself from all those different roles.
So I saw that you were starting up a Patreon page.
I am, yeah, I'm gonna launch it on Friday. That's the plan.
Tell us about that.
I do a weekly Instagram live on Sunday nights, and I pretty much always play a new song or like an unreleased song that maybe I've played live at shows that never got released on Spotify. And I always want to put stuff out that people can hear along the way of like making new music and making like my first album, for example. I've only ever put out EPs before, so I don't like it when so many songs fall to the wayside and no one ever hears them again other than on a live stream or a show. So I wanted to do like a monthly download kind of thing. I've put a bunch of other stuff in it too, obviously, to make it not just like one thing. But the premise is that I want to put out more content and give people more music without having it on Spotify, where like it really matters how much it like takes off. Like I want to make an album that's like majority new, and I'll do singles leading up to it. There'll be like three or four songs that come out as singles perhaps, or maybe three, and then I release singles from that album once that album's out. But I want people like to be able to find a whole album and hear, you know, a whole body of work that's kind of new, that is like what they were hoping for too. I guess that's a very dated way of releasing music.
Well, like we were saying before, you should only do what you want to do as well. You know, if that's the way you want to release it, then what's the point of doing anything else if you don't want to do that? I think Patreon's great because you can get like constructive feedback on song demos.
Yeah.
But also it's an extra income stream, which with having to diversify as independent artists is just great, really.
I totally agree. I think that building a community of people who genuinely want to support your music and put their money where their mouth is and say, like, even if it's £1 a month, like, that transaction of saying this is worth more than getting it for free, like, means so much to artists. It's not necessarily about, you know, them giving you more money than anybody else. It's like they want to be part of something, part of a community, part of supporting your music. And I think like it's a win-win situation for everybody. If they want more music, then paying a monthly subscription allows you to do that, allows you to create that. Then they're going to get what they want and you're going to get what you want, because you're enabled by your community of supporters to do more music, which is what we all want to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've seen a lot of people and myself, like, I have a Patreon page and I love it because it feels like a more personal social media.
Definitely. I'm really looking forward to doing it. I'm actually going to be like doing a blog on mine.
Oh, cool.
As well, because I have a lot of things that I have to say about a lot of different, and I've got a lot of like stories and stuff, I guess, as well. Like, and I want to tell people about all the different people that I work with in my little JD family. I have like a little Joe Dolman group chat on WhatsApp, which is like my whole, to everyone who works in my project. I'm very like, I involve people in everything, you know, not to like swarm them with stuff, but just include people as much as possible. And I'm really looking forward to like sharing a bit more about those people in the blog and like saying what their background is and why they're so amazing, basically. And like, it's going to be fun to kind of invite people into my little world a bit.
So off camera, we briefly spoke about a project that you are launching next year, a new project.
So I guess kind of following on from what we were just talking about lots of music that isn't necessarily representative of your artist project right now in like defining what you want to make right now. I often find myself writing with lots of different artists and producers and writers, and a good friend of mine, we write together for my own music, and we write for other artists as well. And we just ended up writing loads of songs together and realizing that we had like a great partnership of something that wasn't for me or for anybody else. It was just like a project that we were kind of naturally kind of formed. And I'm launching this project next year, and we were talking off camera about like branding, about how everything is so transparent now. And you, like you said, it's about having that constant presence online. And
it's good that you've got like a place to get your, you know, like some of the songs that aren't necessarily for the Joe Dolman project out. Cause I think like that's something that I've found slightly hard, writing a song that I think is, well, I used to do this actually, writing a song that I think is great but isn't Hannah Trigwell. And so the first song that I put out that I was like, that's not Hannah Trigwell, but I'm hell, like, I wrote it, so I'm just going to put it out. Like, I'm just going to put it under my solo name, not start a new thing, and just go with it, was a song called Attention, which came out last year.
Yeah, but that's such a banger.
And I
like, literally such a banger.
I remember people being like, what you know, some people genuinely were like, what are you doing? Like, what's,
really?
What's this? Like, are you?
I did not expect that at all. I thought that was like, I didn't think that was like untrue to you at all. I thought it was like,
I felt like really... it's my voice. Like,
do you feel like it's not true to what you
yeah, I
are
think
as an artist?
I think it is true. I think that I was, you know, I naturally just slipped into singer, songwriter and folky because, as you say, like one voice and a guitar, there's only so many kind of sounds that you can make like that. But I've always written in a very, very pop structure and always loved pop and always listened to pop over anything else. And so like when we were working on this song and then there wasn't a specific person who it was for, you know, subconsciously or like, just without me, like in my head, just wrote this song, loved the song, and then was like, but if, you know, if I've written it, then like, why shouldn't I put it out?
Absolutely. I think if you have a clear vision of how something should be, then maybe you should see it through.
And for me, like the evolution from folky acoustic to pop, I was just ready to do it, you know.
I think that's what I mean by seeing when that song came out, I was like buzzing because it's like a massive tune and also like it just seemed like
it was the right thing to do.
It seemed like such a natural transition for you because like, you know, we haven't like known each other like crazy long, but based on like the music you make and the music that you like share in like Spotify playlists or like stuff that you put on your Instagram story, like love this song or whatever, like that attention song is true to your own interests and your own
absolutely.
Genuine like the kind of music you like. So it's only natural that the music you make not copies what you like, obviously, but like reflects in your influences. Do you know what I mean? Happens with me. I think it happens with me too. Like I've put out songs where like I put out a song called The Middle at the start of this year that's very not similar in style to Attention at all, but like it was like a real transition away from acoustic guitar into something different that people were like, oh my God, that sounds so different, you know, but really I've never sounded more like me, you know? It's funny that way it works out like that sometimes.
I mean, I guess major label artists must feel actually more confined to a genre than independent artists in a way, because in whatever the project is when it's been signed or then that's kind of what they're expected to produce, right?
Definitely. In my experience of that with other artists, there's been a real concentration on a specific aesthetic, a specific package overall in terms of the music, the branding, everything that says this is what we signed you to be because we think you're going to be brilliant if you do that. But the artist might be like, yeah, but I did that a year ago and then you eventually signed me and now I'm making this, which is way over here and it's totally different now. And it's like the artist might not love that as much as they love this new thing over here. You know what I mean? So because everything's so transparent and it's like, oh, well, they're signed. So their first album's going to be huge because they're going to have all this backing and stuff. Like you have to have a career defining album by your first single now. It's not even the album. People don't wait for the album. It's like, you know, your first single has to be absolutely, you know, catastrophically big or you've flopped and it's like so much pressure. But like imagine like Michael Jackson never got to album 3. Think how many songs we wouldn't have got to if he got dropped after his first album because it wasn't the career defining album it needed to be. Imagine like John Mayer didn't get to Continuum. He just stayed at Room for Squares and they were like, yeah, it wasn't quite there, like it didn't hit the numbers we were hoping for or whatever. Like I think it's so important to let artists grow into what they're going to be, and it's difficult.
It must be hard from a business point of view for labels to do that as well, in a way.
It's a lot of they have to put so much trust in the artist to keep
and
going,
like time and money and and so, you know, if they do, I'm sure there's a lot of artists that have been dropped that if they'd have just had that one more album or track or whatever would have made the thing, you know, that one song that really takes them to higher places. But I don't know whether it's as possible anymore because there's so many artists now that are getting signed. The turnover is so much faster, isn't it?
It's not just the turnover of the artists, it's the turnover of the people working in the labels, you know, like label execs and, you know, presidents, vice presidents of the labels themselves are on 12 month contracts because they're having to like top the last person who was doing that job and bringing more revenue because they're trying to keep their business model relevant. Because what a record label's job is massively, you know, we talk about how much we have to diversify as an artist. Imagine not being needed to make albums anymore, like, because you can just do it in your bedroom. Like, they're like now having to massively diversify why they're important and what they can offer in services in return for the massive cut they take, or like buying the licenses, or, you know, the copyright for the master tracks, you know, like if all the music's been recorded and produced and mixed and mastered in someone's own time, then what do we need the label for? It's that constant argument, but this is the kind of thing that the labels are having to turn around just as fast as the artists. So it's a constantly evolving thing, and I like, you see a lot of artists and bands, I don't know if you come across this, but I certainly see a lot of artists like hating on their labels and hating on like
absolutely. Or
like saying all labels suck and blah blah. It's like, well, they're just doing a job too, you know, they've got their own agenda as well, and everybody has. And I think like being independent, you can decide how much of that you take in and how much you keep out of your project, you know?
Yeah. So,
and there always has to be compromise. If you like went into a label office and was like, imagine a record label wanted to sign you, and you were like, and just before you went in, you were like, Hannah, don't go in there and compromise a single thing. Like, you can't do that. You have to be able to compromise on stuff.
Yeah.
But you have to choose what you'll compromise on. You know, you like you won't compromise. Say you might say you won't compromise on certain things, but you will on others. You know, maybe there's a conversation to like, if you want to be a pop act and you want to be played on the radio, you're going to have to compromise on every song on your album being shorter than 6 minutes. You know, if that's what you want to do, then you're going to have to accept that they're not going to want to sign you, because if they're looking to get their artists played on the radio to get that exposure or whatever it is, like,
there's certain
like parameters that need to be met by both sides.
I think people do often think that independent artists, if they've been vocal about being independent, hate major labels.
And there's a big like association, right?
And like, I don't know, for me it's not the case, but I've seen a lot of people who have become independent not through a choice of their own, and because of a miscommunication or, you know, whatever's happened with the label, they are now independent and therefore now hate major labels. And it's, you know, you don't know what goes on in every single relationship between an artist and a major label, but it is a business. And I think it's such a tricky thing, because you, as an artist, you pour your emotions into these songs and you have such an emotional connection to your project, but it's a business at the end of the day. And usually, like, you know, personal emotional stuff and business doesn't mix very well.
My question for you then is, do you think every artist who is out there today cares about the songs and the artistic vision as deeply as like you and I do? And, you know, like we just talked about those artists who like have a hard time with the labels because the label might be trying to change their project or like streamline it or confine it to a certain thing. But do you think there's artists, do you think that's sort of the case for all artists? Do you think there's some artists that are like, I just want to be famous and I want to be a great pop star and I want to sing songs?
Absolutely. I think there are some cases where it's, you can see it sometimes and it's really obvious. And, you know, I'm not going to drop any names because I don't want to be that guy. But I think for those people, it's much easier to compromise in terms of art because there's not as much emotional connection to it, especially if they're not writing it.
The less they're writing the music themselves, the less they might be invested in what it means. Because if it's not coming from them, then it might not be about something they really connect with, truly.
Yeah, like, especially if they don't write. I don't think there's anything wrong with not writing music that you release.
Sure.
I just think it must be easier to make compromises on, like, artistic direction and stuff if you either don't write it because you don't want to write it, but if you just, if you're not a writer,
you know, because we talk about like artist versus songwriter a lot in the music industry, in terms of like, you know, different roles involved with each of those titles. But you know, an artist could be someone who writes every last word of that song and has got their heart and soul on the line for their story and their lives, versus another artist who is seen in the limelight by the world in the exact same, you know, position as that other artist that cares about every last detail. And then next, stood right next to them, is someone who doesn't care about any of that stuff. They just want to be the singer, and like, and they're they're both valid.
And if you know, if the person is not actually in any way like what they're portraying on stage in real life, that person is a performance artist. There's just so many layers to it.
Yeah, there really is, and it's like a, it's a constantly evolving thing as the expectations of what it means to be an independent artist, especially in, I think the expectation of independent artists is getting bigger by the day. You know,
definitely.
You know, how many times have you had a conversation about TikTok in the last 2 years? And like, and how many?
Yeah, it's getting increasingly intense.
It's like I've said like to you before, like I'm not, you know, visual stuff is not my like forte. I don't really feel like, I don't enjoy expressing myself in visual content where I'm in it, like where I'm viewed in it. I don't really care for that side of the artistic display. Like maybe because I just don't have any experience in it, or like I just, it might be like a self-confidence thing, I don't know. But I just love making music and creating, like I love making album artwork and stuff like that, you know. But in terms of just on the whole, like visual stuff, like video content isn't my like set, like I don't feel most comfortable there. So I find it hard.
You're going to give TikTok a miss.
Well, this is the thing, I constantly, like I have an account on TikTok. I have 12 okay. followers. I've never posted a video. So, you know, any day now I could be a viral sensation.
You never know. You never know.
So I would love to, I'd love to do it, but I feel so much, that's what I mean about the expectations of an artist. Like there's so much pressure for me to be viral on TikTok, not just do it. Like everything you do has to be a massive success. If you put out a single on Spotify, it has to be, you know, a million streams in X amount of days, hours, seconds. Like it's just ridiculous how the expectation is so high, because, and it's because we can do so much for ourselves, which is a beautiful thing, that it's like you kind of live and die by the same sword, in the sense that, like, you know, I write, record, you know, produce my own music with other people, of course, as well as doing it by myself. Like I make my own music videos and like my own artwork, and I put, you know, I even run my own promotions company and put on my own tours, and I like do, I do so much independently that it's amazing. I have so much control creatively to do what I want, but people know, the world knows that artists can do that now. So they expect you to deliver, you know, even though I've never showed people that I want to be a TikTok guy or like do TikTok, you know, people expect me to be really successful at it, even though I've never tried it or have never even shown interest in it. So that's why I steer off it, because I'm like, I don't want people to now think less of what I do put my time into, i.e. making music, etc. Like I don't want them to see like the fail, like I'm already predicting a failure of my TikTok success before I've even done it. But like imagine I put out stuff on TikTok, like making videos, you know, music stuff, whatever, and it didn't take off. The people who did see it and then watched it not take off are gonna then be like, they're gonna have less faith in my whole project because they've seen something not take off. Like you kind of like have to pick, I feel like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like this pick and choosing of like where you put your time and trying to hope that everything you do does well so people believe in it. Like, you know, there's nothing worse than people seeing like you've been promoting your brand new song for a month. You know, take it back to the music. You're an independent artist. You've been promoting your brand new single for a month straight. You put the song out and no one likes it. People have less faith in your music now. And that's fair enough because they don't like your music, or like your music isn't but...
It is kind of like you have one chance.
But now the pressure is on so many different levels. Like you have to, you know, launch a TikTok or a YouTube channel or, you know, whatever it is you do. Like it has to be a raging success. Every tour has to sell out. Every, you know, there's such a demand for, well, it's not even demand, it's like such an expectation of things to be perfect, because there are people who do it independently who nail it.
Yeah, but it, in the same way that like a massive superstar is like one in, well, it used to be one in a million, one in a billion now, let's say. it's still that kind of way on the internet, you know. For someone to get like viral video after viral video after viral video, it's the same kind of ratio. But people, like you say, like most people don't think about it like that. They're like, you know, have you consistently put out viral videos on TikTok? And if you haven't, oh, well, you must not be that
exactly
good.
And it's like, that's the kind of pressure that I just like, I crumble under it big time. And it's like, I'm not ashamed to say that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, I'm okay. Yeah. Like, I sleep perfectly well at night knowing that I have my strengths and weaknesses as an artist, as an independent musician, business, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know.
I think having that like personal insight is so important when you're independent.
You've got to be honest with yourself.
If you do, absolutely, yeah. And if you do try and like force yourself to be, maybe not even to be good at something, but to like something or to enjoy a certain part of something, it's just not sustainable. Yeah. And you just end up making something or doing something that's not good or like not worth the time that you've put into it.
Well, it won't be worth it because it won't be genuine. So it's never going to connect if it's not genuine.
Yeah.
Like if you don't, you know, you can genuinely love making stupid TikToks and that's cool. Like, well, I say stupid, I mean like just silly, funny videos, like, that aren't maybe as serious as like your music might be. You know, Lewis Capaldi, like wearing 1,000 pairs of sunglasses every day. Like, you know, he genuinely has fun doing that by the looks of it.
That is quality content.
It is quality content.
You know, that is quality content.
You know, like, so you look at something like that, it's like, okay, it's genuine to him because he loves doing it. You know, it's fun. But if you don't have fun doing that, then don't do it. Like, I think, and being transparent with people, like people ask me, like, people mess me like, when are you going to start doing TikTok? I want to duet with you or whatever. It's like, well, I just say to people like, I don't think I am because it's not really my vibe. Like, and I think
it's weird though, the amount of people that do that out of, like you say, like out of a pressure to do it. Like I know a lot of YouTubers who make videos consistently and they don't really want to do that. And that is just so bizarre.
Yeah, I think it's crazy because I'm someone who consistently feels the pressure to make videos but doesn't and I just have to live with the consequences that I don't have the numbers online that like people who do consider, like, I think if you put the time into it then yeah, your work, you deserve the numbers, and I fully, you know, but I don't put the time in, so I'm not worthy of the numbers.
If you did put the time in, then would it even mean anything if you didn't like doing it? I suppose it depends how much you value the numbers, really. Because if it is like just for fun and you got like 5 listens on something, or, you know, I've put songs out sometimes where I wasn't sure if anyone would listen to it and a lower number of people listened to it than my average number of people or whatever. And it's just felt good that it was out. Yeah. And like, I loved everything about, like, I loved the song, I loved the artwork, I loved the video. So it didn't really matter. And I think that to me makes just more sense than doing things for the sake of it. But
I agree. I think defining your expectations going into any release of any content, be a YouTube video, a TikTok, or a song or an album, like defining your expectations of what you want to get out of it before you even make it, first and foremost, but also before you put it out, like defining your expectations on numbers and stuff like that. Like I'm not someone who cares about numbers in the sense that like I don't make music for the numbers, but I, when it comes to like that's the thing, making music is a separate thing for me because I just do it because I want to do it, and it, you know I'll spend as much time on it as I need to spend on it for it to be right, whereas like video, you know, stuff like TikTok, that kind of video content that I don't make, I feel like I would only be making it for the numbers to kind of match up to this expectation that I feel exists on independent artists. And because I'd be like focusing so hard on that, it would probably not work because it wouldn't be genuine. It's just like, as an independent, like I said, it's people expect you to do everything because you can, in the sense that nobody's stopping you, no label, no nothing, no nothing's getting in the way, because you can buy, you know, you can make music on really basic like software, you can film video content on your phone, you know it's like the 18 music video Ed Sheeran made was like £20 budget. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you listen to like interviews of like Phineas talking about Billie Eilish's album, it's like, oh yeah, I use loads of stock Logic plugins, like, you know, and it's like you know, so there's no, that when that stuff gets in the public domain, it shows people there is no limit to what you can do if you put the time in, but there is a limit you can put on yourself, which is like, do I want to do that? Well, no, so I don't do it. You know, and it's hard because then you worry about what the consequences of that decision will be, you know.
Previously with your managers that you had, did they kind of try to push you ever into doing stuff like on socials that you didn't want to do?
Yes, definitely.
I think,
which, and fair enough, rightly so.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because like a manager only makes money if you make money. As much as you can be like best friends with your manager, there's always going to be things that maybe you disagree on if you don't want to do. But if you don't do them, then potentially you won't make as much money as they want you to make to take that 20% or whatever the cut might be. I think we all have to deal with that kind of pressure from managers as well. And there's been times, you know, previously with my former managers when I've felt bad actually for not doing more, even though I've done loads of, you know, maybe I've made like a music video for a song and I've made a lyric video and doing this and that. I'm like, if it's not done well, that's the thing with a manager where I've been like, oh, I actually feel bad because they're dependent on this as well.
Yeah, I have a very similar feeling from when I, like, you know, because actually my previous manager didn't take a cut from me as a musical director or a session player or anything like that. He was just an artist manager. He only managed me as an artist. So if I went on tour for 3 months with somebody and then went straight into a festival season playing, you know, pretty much every weekend, for 2 months across the summer, like, and then put out something as an artist, like, he was only getting a cut on that 1 month out of 6 months time, you know. So I feel bad, like, and I've always like been like, maybe you should be taking more, but the reason I had them was to push me as an artist, and then there's like a compromise to be made.
Yeah,
you know, it's so,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
It's good that, you know, it shows that you actually care about the people you work with when you actually feel bad, you know. That like you understand that they are, you know, investing in you with their time and effort, and you feel they deserve something for that, which obviously they do. But you also have to be honest with yourself about what you want to do with your life and your time, you know, and your career.
Yeah.
So it can be a very tricky balancing act, which is all under the public eye, you know.
Pre-internet, a lot of things didn't used to be. If you were playing in a certain city, then that city would know.
Yeah.
But maybe the other cities wouldn't. And if that city didn't sell hardly any tickets, then only that city would know. But now everywhere, you know, if you have a gig that doesn't sell particularly well or whatever it is in a particular area, then that's common knowledge now, isn't it?
Exactly. Everything's common knowledge now, almost, it feels.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to say thanks so much for speaking to me today and ask you a question. What is your track of the week?
Oh, good question. Let me pull up Spotify.
That you need to know it off by heart. No, it doesn't count.
I'm going to cheat. I'm categorically cheating. My track of the week this week is I'm Lonely by Luz. That's probably my track of the week this week. It was between that.
Oh, I do.
It was
like
between
that.
And a song called Older Than I Am by Lennon Stella on a new album that came out on Friday. And I really love that album.
So Lennon Stella is a singer from Nashville.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. Definitely recommend people to watch that on Netflix. Is it on?
I think it's on Netflix. It was on ABC, yeah. I think, in the States. But I think it's on Netflix now.
And then my final question. What is the best lesson that you've learned so far in your career?
Without it sounding really cynical, no one will care about your music as much as you do. And I don't mean that in like a, and it's really sad that that's the case. It's more just like, be be aware that everyone has their own agenda. And what I think the positive side of that is that because everyone has their own agenda, you should be grateful for when people care about your thing, because they've got their own thing they're caring about as well, you know, their own like vision of their own direction of their career. So if someone puts their time in to help you with yours, like, you should be super grateful for that and never take it for granted.
Yeah, nice. Thanks, Joe.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me. See you soon when the world starts spinning again.
Thanks for tuning into this episode. Be sure to hit subscribe and leave a comment to let us know what you think, and I will see you next time on Backstage Pass.